On this episode of Sunday Morning Linux Review, we have a guest host, Tom Lawrence, in for Matt Enders. We'll be going over the Linux convention scene. We've also got a review of a Linux distro this week. Stay tuned to see what that is. And Tony, you've got some stuff.
Yeah, just random news articles.
new babies. That's right. And Tom, I know you've got, you'll have some stuff for us too.
Talk a little bit about pfSense and, Samsung's little security problem they have.
Yeah. Exactly. So stay tuned for Sunday Morning Linux Review.
All right.
The Sunday Morning Linux Review. Starring Mary Talbot. Tony Venus. And Matt Enders as me.
And this is episode 154.
Happy 5th of July.
Yeah.
Happy 5th. Yeah. You're happy after a 5th.
Yes. Yes.
And this is Tony Venus.
Mary Tomich.
And Tom Lawrence.
Yeah, so Tom is sitting in for Matt. Matt's not going to be here today.
And man. So welcome, Tom. Good to have you here. Well, we're kind of catching up. I tell you, before we started talking about the fireworks and how some of us didn't get much sleep for various reasons.
Yesterday is 4th of July here in the U.S. That's Independence Day.
Yep.
So fireworks around here has been all week long.
Yeah, it's, since they changed the laws here in the great state of Michigan, everything's legal, and it goes on and starts a week before, and maybe next week will be done.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, so anyway, but enough of that, I guess. But Tony, you have big news as far as what you've been doing the last couple weeks.
Yeah, big news, and the reason that we put off a week, so it's been 3 weeks since our last show, is we have a baby girl. So my wife and I, it's Kaylin Lilia, and she was born on June 24th at 2:34 a.m.
Whoa. Awesome.
So, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Middle of the night, baby.
It was. Yeah. I was up until about 10 a.m. Mm-hmm. the next day. And so, you know, over 24 hours straight with getting that going, with everything. And I was tired.
I bet you were. Congratulations.
Thank you.
So, and the baby, I haven't even heard the baby.
No, she's...
She's sleeping through the night already?
Almost. She's actually is a very good girl and sleeps.
Well, girls usually
quiet,
are.
Quiet, generally.
Awesome.
And,
yeah, that's great.
Oh, excellent. Excellent, Tony.
Yeah. Well, I made a bedside bassinet, so that my wife's nursing, so she can nurse, and then just roll her over into the bassinet, and so she's out of the bed, but sleeping close, and anytime if she starts fussing, then Kim can just put her arm over there and quiet her.
Yeah. How long did it take you to make that bassinet? You just slap some boards together and make a little, like a box.
I put some work into it.
Okay.
I don't know, 30 hours, 40 hours.
Oh, wow. There's a lot of work into it.
I'm not a really good woodworker or anything, but I actually made it. I made it like 4 or 5 years ago. I didn't have it done in time for my daughter, my first daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And she's turning 5 in September. But we used it for my son.
Okay.
And then again now.
Oh, great.
Yeah. So it hooks right to the bed and.
Wow.
It actually works really good. Yeah.
That's cool.
Very good.
What else? Fireworks. We went to 4 different fireworks shows this week. Started off with the Taylor one. The Taylor one's pretty good.
Yeah.
Except we had really good seats for the Taylor. Mm-hmm. We were right in Heritage Park.
Yeah, it was a good display.
Yeah. And then last night we went to the Trenton one. The big company in Trenton is Fritz Enterprises.
Mm-hmm.
And they sponsor the whole 4th of July bash, or I'm not sure the whole thing. But we didn't get to go for all that. We just went for the fireworks.
Mm-hmm.
And we parked like a mile away, and they were still. I thought they were, if we were had such a good spot or a better spot, I would say they were better than Taylor fireworks. They're really good. They light them off in the Detroit River.
On a barge.
On a barge, yeah.
Oh, it's kind of like the ones that I went. Oh, I went to the ones that were in Detroit a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, you went down there for that?
Yeah. I was actually, I went to a fundraiser, so I was up. So I was looking on them. Yeah, it was kind of fun. We had guests from out of town. And so we always try to, you know, show Detroit off. And so they were very impressed. And then the money goes to a charity or, you know, goes for a good cause. So that's kind of fun. And yeah, that's so cool. So it was great. But at fireworks, I mean, they're great in the hands of professionals.
Oh, yeah.
But the retail fireworks folks, but, well, if they're not handled properly, you know.
Yeah. I was watching a video this morning on Facebook and it was the, firework fails.
Yes.
Oh, and it was like, you know, people sticking, ball rockets in their butt and yeah. It doesn't shoot off. And, somebody they put like a, some kind of little firecracker in their nose.
Oh,
and it was like sitting there. They were like, and they were surprised it was burning their face.
Yeah.
It's like, really?
Oh my gosh. Well, and then on the way here, I saw the buy one, get nine free fireworks sign. I took a picture of it.
Yes.
Where was that? I'm going to go buy.
I went and got nine free.
It's on Northline Road.
Ooh. So
there's one on Northline too. There's one on.
And people were sleeping in their car. There was like two cars parked. There.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody was sleeping in it. And I thought, oh, I should just wake them up. But I thought, I'll just
all night.
Snip a picture and that's it. So anyway, but. So it sounds like you were busy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, baby stuff. Very busy.
Yeah.
Except for I was doing more babysitting for my other two kids
mm-hmm.
and keeping them occupied so they didn't bother mom and new baby. And
yeah.
That's the key.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mom's got enough of one. Babysit the other
ones. Oh, yeah.
Well, sounds like you did a good job.
Yeah. Yeah. It worked out pretty good.
Good. Good.
So what was your last couple weeks?
Well, I think the last episode I talked, you know, I think it's been kind of an ongoing discussion about my graphics and the, you know, the fact that my NVIDIA driver I've been using is no longer part of it. Well,
yeah.
I figured out, NVIDIA dropped support, for this particular, adapter, several instances ago. I think it was like last fall. And, I went to the PCBSD forums. Actually, I didn't even go to the forums in the release, announcement. Down below there, somebody had written in and made a comment about that, and they described how you could take care of it. So, so I'm going to go ahead and give that a try. And if I'm not able to get it taken care of in an efficient fashion, then I will probably just kind of wipe this and just reinstall.
Yeah, because I remember one time with my desktop, I had to go with legacy drivers.
Yeah.
And actually, the video card I have now is still what I consider a decent video card, but it's soon going to be. In that legacy driver
category.
Age.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So, so is that. So I was kind of, you know, working with that. And, also, you know, this week is the Linux review, Linux distro review. And so, I spent some time working on that and I'll have more about that later. So that kind of occupied my time.
All right.
How about you, Tim?
Well, I've been working on some more videos. I did a, review of Crucible, the deployment server. So I've been putting that out there and it's got a lot of views. Still not as many as my pfSense video, which just hit 14,000 reviews.
Wow.
And that's actually been fun too. There's a lot of interaction with people that are interested in pfSense. I did that. It, you know, I was like 14,000 people wanted to listen to me talk for an hour. I was like, wow. I mean, it's a long video, but I went very in depth of all the details and features of pfSense. Which also has a new update as well. I don't have all the details.
I was going to say, I just saw that.
It's on my to-do list.
Yep.
Right.
But I'm also working on, like we discussed a few minutes ago, is the, we're going to work on some reviews of the financial software for Linux that I use for my companies. They don't have the best documentation, but I think it's really good software. So I'm going to hopefully get some videos on that. I just got to figure out a way not to release my financials to the public, but still show you how to use the software. So I'm going to randomize some of my bank downloads and put it together.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. I think, that I did that once. I had, it was a very tiny database and I just replaced names with baseball players or, you know, stuff like that. And then,
I'll do something along those lines and put it together. Cause I think there's a demand for it. There's an interest in it. And, if I could put together a whole package, like this is how you cannot use QuickBooks to run a business. I think there's an interest.
I suspect there is.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, very good. Very good. So.
And that's all the downloads you get from your bank are all like CVS or text files, right?
Yeah.
So you can just do like copy and or find and replace.
It's a different format name. But they usually, the KMI Money supports CSV. It actually supports the Quicken and QuickBooks downloads.
Oh.
So if your bank exports things into a QuickBooks format for your statements, it'll import them fine because the format's basically an open standard.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So it's, they're the only ones I know that seem to have done a really good job. They came at money, people to easily import that. It lines up fine. Mm-hmm. And it, because it'll predetermine. So if I spend things on Amazon that goes into my computer parts category, for example, it realizes all my Amazon purchases that go there. Mm-hmm. So in all my fuel purchases, because I'm a creature of habit, I fill up to the same gas station that goes to my fuel expense without asking any questions. So that kind of auto labeling, that's something QuickBooks does and what people really like. And
yes.
Does it too. So it's,
oh, nice.
Yeah, it's nice.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Well, I'll be interested to see that once you're.
Yeah, it's got it's a powerful system that I just kept playing around with until I figured it out. And the documentation, I've got a lot of written, but it's not, they need a good video tutorial, things like that. So I think that would help them a lot.
Yeah, I think that really helps people get up and running a lot faster when you can sit there and watch it. And then replicate it on your keyboard versus trying to read it, and then you might get stuck someplace.
Exactly.
So and excellent.
I don't mind the interaction. I helped a lot of people. They had some weird PFSet scenarios, and all the comments and the messages I got. Huge amount of interest in the Russian speaking languages. So I talked to a few people over and helped them out with some PFSet questions they had sending up the VPNs.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Now that PFSense video, was this a separate one that you did? Because I think you did one at PenguinCon.
I
really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
Is that the same one that you
it's
put?
It's essentially the same one.
Okay.
But what I do is I don't just throw up the PenguinCon video. I sit down with a mic
separate.
And redo that same slideshow.
So
put that together. So that's,
that
way it's nice, clean, clear cut, and there's no interruption or questions in between. Because you can't hear the crowd's questions anyway.
That's true.
Yeah, I didn't have everybody mic'd. I didn't have anyone stepping up. Of course, it would have been hard to do a penguin can talk like that because so many people had questions. It would have been.
You wouldn't have gotten through.
Give me about 2 hours, guys.
Exactly.
Because you were flying through it there. And you
had a ton of information.
You still went right to the end of the time.
You were talking so fast, trying to convey the information and also get the questions answered.
Yeah,
so.
My friend Mike says, he was in that crowd. He's like, mentally, he goes, Tom's talking too fast. He's going to run out of content. And he's like, Tom has a lot of content.
Yeah, it was very, very good. So, hopefully we'll get a link to that in the show notes.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So that would be
wonderful. Yeah, send it over.
Okay. Yeah. Will do.
Good. All right. I guess we'll probably.
Let me turn my phone off.
It's just tweeting. There's like, it was whistling over there and I'm trying to ignore it. And. Just a busy guy, Tony.
I think it's my wife's grandmother.
Oh, calling you.
Health issues.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I guess we'll move on.
Do you have a Samsung phone?
Yeah.
You heard of the security breach?
I heard
about that in the security part.
I heard of one that was
a few weeks ago, wasn't it?
A few months ago, but
it's
with.
Yes.
It's a few one.
Hmm. Yes.
The details on it are interesting.
Really?
There's not a fix for it.
And you can't uninstall SwiftKey.
Right.
But I thought the fix was upgrade to the latest Lollipop.
No. Not for this one.
This
is another security breach.
I was aware of the one, about 3 weeks ago, I think?
No, or I think it was about 2 months ago.
Two
this
months?
One's pretty recent.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe I was just only aware of the second one, and there was a first one, and I wasn't aware of it.
The updates to SwiftKey, which your phone forces to check, even you can't uninstall SwiftKey because it's part of the default. So even if you're using a different keyboard, it's when the phone reboots or randomly when it chooses, it does an HTTP to download updates. And please note, I did not say HTTPS.
I noticed that.
So it does HTTP, grab the updates. So all you need is Wi-Fi network, man in the middle, and replace it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a YouTube video showing proof of concept. The guy that discovered it showed how it can be done, how it can take the phone. So all you got to do is anything that could proxy the phone or anything that could replace that file that's unencrypted. Oh, and it does have a hash to make sure it's the right file, but that's also requested in an unencrypted manner. So between the two of them, it's easy to do it. Obviously not likely if you're on the 4G network, and if you have it on Wi-Fi and you don't reboot your phone while on Wi-Fi, you're probably good. Because mm-hmm. it checks upon reboot.
Okay. Updates. Okay.
So it's not like throw away your Samsung phone. It's not the worst, but it's there and it exists. They have a patch for it right away. They can't get carriers to push it because it's an OS level problem. And the carriers review everything, especially Verizon. They're notoriously 2 or 3 months behind on the patches because they're Verizon's got a lot of strict policies before they'll mm-hmm. push an update.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. Tying these to the carriers is still the root cause of a lot of security issues. Hmm. We could have those updates not tied to carriers because this is the phone. We should get updates from Samsung, not Verizon.
That makes sense. Yes. Yeah. That's way too logical, Tom.
It's way too much.
Yeah, really.
So it'll never happen.
It'll never happen.
Right.
Root your phone, solve the problem.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know, I've been trying to do that. And I actually got put aside. So
That's tricky.
I want to do it on mine, but the bootloader for the Verizon phones
is locked.
It's locked, yes. And nobody's figured out how to.
Does that.
Mm. I heard the ATT is the same.
They're easy to get around. The AT&T ones, you can swap it out pretty quick, but the Verizon ones are very. They offered a bounty for a while. They were kind of crowdfunding whoever come up with crack, and they will give them the prize.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, if everyone puts in, you know, like, I'll throw $10 at getting cracked, and you know, 1,000 people are throwing in, and there's a big prize for cracking the bootloader on some of the Verizon ones. I think it's actually might have been done on the, because I have the Note 4, and I think it's been done now on Note 4. I haven't kept up with it in a while.
Yeah.
Hmm.
It's on my to-do list to root it, though.
All right.
Yeah, it's been on my to-do list through my phone for several years.
Not rooted.
Oh, yeah.
It works really well. I've been really happy for a non-rooted. It does everything I want. They don't have a lot of bloatware. But things like the security issues annoy me. Mm-hmm. And I should be able just to patch it, but I can't. Because for instance, says, no, we're reviewing the things.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, and I have the Evo 3D over here. That's what I'm using for our soundboard. And I had the same problem where the bootloader's locked and I can't. And then now it's so old, nobody cares about it, so they're not still trying to crack it.
Yeah.
I wish I could. I had an old Droid, like first generation Droid, and I was able to ROM that one.
I'm looking at getting an Ubuntu phone. I might pick one up to test. I think you can buy them for right around the $100 mark for pretty lower end spec, but they'll ship them with Ubuntu on it.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so I've seen some.
I've seen stories, yeah.
It's looking promising.
Yeah.
So I'd like to see
it. Wasn't really panned.
Yeah.
So.
All right, well, I think we should move on. Yeah.
Okay.
So on for.
Matt, what's happening with the kernel?
Mary, what's going on in the kernel? I know that's what it says. Actually, I'll read this, or actually not read it, but I'll just mention this at the latest stable kernel is 4.1.1. And, of course, the mainline is 4.1. And we've got several other kernels, including long-term kernel 3.18.17. And it continues. There's several different branches all the way down to 2.6.3, 2.67, which is still creaking along out there. And for some... for some instances where it's needed. So that's really all I've got on the kernel. I mean,
all right.
What else should I say?
That's good enough.
That's
for
good
me.
Enough. Yeah.
Thank you, Mary.
I should have dug out a quote.
And
Tony, what's going on with the Linux distributions this week?
The distros for this 3 weeks. So I think we're just scanning through them. If you have something to say, Mary, pop in.
Yeah, I think, what are we starting with? Black Lab, I think.
I can't remember what was our last record. Wasn't it the 14th? So I think Console Linux is on that list. So Console Linux was on the 15th. Yeah, Black Lab.
Oh, Console Linux. That is a Linux distro that I'll be reviewing today.
All right.
So stay tuned. I do have a few things to say about it.
Cool. Black Lab Linux, the 15.6 GNOME was released on the 16th.
Yeah, I do have a quick comment on that. Black Lab Linux, now it comes with, 3.16.0 kernel. However, you can also get a Ubuntu compatible kernel 3.1, 3.0, or if you want to run their install script, you can have the 4.0 kernel, but it's only available via an install script. So, so it looks like you got some options as far as what kernel you want to run if you're going to run Black Lab Linux.
All right.
So, yeah.
Cool. All right. Next up on, is, Robo Linux 7.9.2, and that was released on 6.19. And yeah.
Yeah.
It's Robo.
It's Robo. It's Linux. They mentioned too that all of their existing users, including the premium members, can upgrade, by just simply clicking on that, Robo Linux auto upgrade. So it's an option in the system menu. It sounds like, it's pretty easy to do. It's a one click affair. And they also mentioned too that, they did not include, there's a text editor called, Mavit. I don't know if you're familiar with it. I installed it just to see what it was. And,
yeah,
you know, I'm so used to Kate, and Kate, is really a robust text editor that, I was not too impressed with it. It's a GTK app. It's kind of simple, but I think maybe for people who want that kind of approach, it probably works well. But, Robo Linux has not included Mavit in their KDE, version, which kind of makes sense because it's a GTK app. So, yeah. And because what intrigued me about it is that it said it can cut and paste without having to type Control C and V. Instead, you can use your mouse wheel, which speeds up your work significantly. So I decided to try that, and it wasn't, I don't know if maybe I needed to map something to my mouse wheel, but it was not. I tried to highlight it and use my mouse to click it, to scroll it, and to see what it was doing.
It just didn't do it.
It wasn't doing it. So,
you know, that's what one thing I've gotten used to on Windows, because I'm in and out of PuTTY all the time, is that you highlight within PuTTY, you highlight, and then you let go and go to another one, and it auto-copies, and you can use Control-V to paste into another application.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you copy from another application, you go to PuTTY, and you just middle-click or the scroll wheel click, and it pastes it in for you.
Maybe the series of actions I took weren't the actions that were correct for this. So I was kind of flying through there and thinking, well, I'll give this a try.
Yeah,
so
likely it's auto copy and then the middle scroll wheel to paste.
Yeah. So anyway, but yeah, so that's something that they've got there. But if you're running KDE Robo Linux, forget about it. Install it yourself.
Right. All right. Next up we have on the 20th is Magia 5. And they've had a lot of development releases recently. And it's been about a year since their last release.
Yeah, and they mentioned with this release too that they've got over or almost 2,000 apps and 25,000 packages. So and those of course are all available from their official repositories. And this particular release includes both the Qt 5.4 toolkit as well as the GTK plus 3.14.8 toolkit. So, and a plethora of desktops. A lot of desktops.
All right.
KDE to GNOME to Cinnamon to Mate to XFCE to LXQT and Plasma. So.
That is long.
And the kitchen sink.
All right. All right, on 6/21, we have Linux Mangaka New.
Mangaka. Yes, and you know, that is, actually, I think that's Japanese for cartoon artist.
Oh.
So it's probably a manga type of thing.
Yeah. You know, I was trying to say Mangaka.
Mangaka.
I was trying to say that, but it didn't come out that way.
Mangaka. Yeah. So that's what that is.
All right.
So looks kind of nice.
Yeah. Next up, we alluded to it earlier, is pfSense 2.2.3. It was released on 6/25. And they have some security bug fixes. And as we all know, it's a firewall distro with based on FreeBSD.
Yay, FreeBSD. And they also mentioned, too, that if you run into any kind of cosmetic problems, I have cosmetic problems all the time. They said that it's probably because of a stale browser's cache. So they just said, just to get that, clear the browser cache to resolve it. So sounds like an easy fix.
All right. Yeah, I'm looking through the release notes, and it's showing updates for multiple OpenSSL vulnerabilities, and that's one I'm surprised they haven't tried to move over to Libre SSL.
I don't know. It seems like they should. I mean,
yeah, everything I know that it's just a drop-in replacement.
Yeah,
and it's developed by the BSD guys. You know.
Yeah, that would make sense.
It's odd that they haven't switched it, because I was expecting that in a new release as well. And I'm like, oh, they're still based on OpenSSL.
Right.
Isn't Google funding a lot of that? Like a few other places that were getting together, putting some money behind it, if I understand, with Libre SSL. Just trying to get some developers going on that. You
know, that makes sense.
Relies on it as well.
Yeah, there's a, we can talk about it in the news, but I found an article about there's a consortium getting together for funding those, you know, too big to fail kind of applications.
Yeah, we're so dependent, intertwined on it. It's exactly too big to
fail. Yeah.
And it,
the proper use of too big to fail.
The proper use of too big to fail. Yeah, when you look at the details, you're like, wow, how does this many companies, we depend on it to encrypt our internet, and there's just a couple developers barely contributing to it.
That's kind of shocking. Yeah. I remember reading about that, and I'm like, oh my God.
That's all the people that work on this? What?
Yeah.
It was amazing. So, all right.
All right. We have next up is Sparky Linux 4.0, and they're based on the Debian testing branch.
Yes, they are. And actually, this release is, it's called, I want to say Taike. And this is a nickname that was given to a hypothetical gas giant located in the solar system's Oort cloud. Just in case you were wondering about that. It's a name. It was the Greek goddess of fortune and prosperity. And how ironic, it's the Greek goddess of fortune and prosperity when the Greek people are today voting that whether they're going to, I think, go forward with the austerity measures or not.
Yeah.
You know, that whole euro, I mean, that's...
They're in some turmoil.
It's going to be, between today and tomorrow, it is going to be very interesting to watch. So
they've also adopted some Bitcoin. There's been a lot. In Greece has gone up dramatically. I think it makes a case for having a non-governmental currency. You know, and it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, it will be. I'll tell you. I'll be watching that. So, all right, Tony.
All right. Next up we have is a BSD release, Dragonfly BSD 4.2.0. And that was on 6/29. Next one, we have Open Mandriva LX 2014.2. So it looks like it's an update for their version from last year.
Oh, I'm sorry, Tony. because of my graphics problem, I didn't get scrolled up in time. I wanted to mention something about Dragonfly BSD that I found on their site, and I thought this was kind of interesting. Apparently they've made significant progress in the DRM graphics subsystem with full acceleration, 2D and 3D supported on most Intel and some AMD GPUs. They said the kernel DRM code has been partially updated to Linux 3.14 in order to follow the evolution of the i915 and the Radeon drivers. Many Linux programming interfaces and data structures have been implemented in order to make the DRM code and its drivers run with as few modifications as possible. From the point of view of the graphics subsystem, the Dragonfly kernel can thus be considered a BSD license implementation of Linux. I read that and I just thought, whoa, you know, as far as the graphics portion of it goes, because they have just apparently they pulled some stuff out of Linux from that perspective. So I thought that was pretty interesting. So I wanted to share that.
Cool.
So, all right. I guess we were on Open Mandriva.
Yeah. Yep. So Open Mandriva was on 6/30.
Yep. And let's see here. They, I guess I don't have much to say about them.
All right.
Other than, it's good to see. I think some people thought that they were going, you know, with Mandriva, the whole French company going away, that they, people were thinking that this distro was kind of gone too, but they're separate.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, so it's gonna continue. Yeah.
All right. next up, also on the 30th, we have Open Media Vault 2.1 which is a Debian-based distro for network attached storage. So looks interesting. I'm not sure how much difference is this compared to other things that are out there though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is actually from what I was able to glean. This is actually a fairly modest update too. It was mainly some bug fixes which involved some minor issues with the web GUI. So, but they've got it apparently fixed, and here we are.
All right, very cool. Next up we have is Linux Mint 17.2, which is it's based on the LTS of Ubuntu 14.04, so it's mm-hmm. kind of considered an older, but it's more stable.
Yeah,
and that's what I run on all my computers, my desktop, my laptop here, and I love it. And I did the update right
you
away.
You run the stable version?
Yeah.
Okay.
And there really isn't anything I need for Bleeding Edge, mm-hmm. And I prefer stable. I don't want a broken computer.
Stable over unstable. Yeah, there's a comfort
right.
You probably get from that. Well, speaking of that, not to digress too far off, but one other thing I did last week is I put the long-term support release of Kubuntu on this older PC that I had, and then I donated it to a community organization.
Nice.
So I set it up so that it'll update. It looks nice. It's, I think they're going to enjoy it.
All right.
So,
very good.
We'll see. I'm hoping I don't get too many calls.
Yeah.
But I tried to make it look sort of, I hate to say this, but kind of windowy, just so that people, when they go in there, because it was running, the previous version was, the previous computer, which was like 12 years old, was running XP.
Yeah.
I think, no, was it running Vista? I can't remember. It was running in just an old version, so.
Linux has come so far. I mean, my parents mm-hmm. were very not computer literate. That's what they run is they have Ubuntu on there. My dad knows where the browser icon is. And
Yeah.
So
they were they can't break it. When they had a Windows computer, it was a lot of tech support. And I lived 3 hours away, so it wasn't easy.
Ooh, yeah.
And I have really slow internet, so remote support was difficult too.
Oh, yeah. That's bad. They'd
never break their Linux.
Yeah, that's great. That's
I did great. The same thing for my mom. She got a laptop from me. It had been 4 years ago. And I put the LTS on and then. And it's just worked for her. I haven't had to do anything with it. And
isn't that great?
So
the only thing you might have to do is just upgrade it when that one goes out of support if the laptop is still working.
Right. Yeah. And I've been over to her house a couple of times, because they live about 3 hours away. Mm-hmm. And when I'm over there, I'm like, oh, let me get on your computer for a minute. And then I look at it, and I'm like, I have to recalibrate myself to, oh, wait, this is the old. Old UI to get around. And, mm-hmm.
Well, at least for the LTS support, is the laptop will be obsolete before the LTS support. So.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
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 Yep. Cool.
All right.
Next up we have is Anti-X 15. That's also on the 30th.
Yep. And they've got, this particular one includes, they've got Simple Scan, which is, I'm always a little surprised when one of these more modest distros includes like a scanning program or something. It seems a little unusual to me, but I certainly think it's great because I've got a scanner, and they've got the Antix full, which is their it's got four window managers, including I think JWM, Fluxbox, IceWM, and then one called Herbsoft. Whatever it is called. It's too small on my screen. I can't read it. But anyway, so just suffice it to say that they've got many options for you if you're going to be running Antix. So.
All right. Very cool. Next up, we have 4M Linux 13.0. That was released on 7.2. And they're...
Didn't I do a review of that?
I think so. I can't remember now.
Or was it 4Q Linux? I can't remember. 4M. But anyway, I think we talked about that several episodes ago.
Or was it Cubes?
No, there was a 4 in it. It was 4M Linux.
Hmm.
So that was a while ago. So.
Yeah. And actually, that's the end of our list.
All right. Good job.
Yeah, it was a long one. Sorry, guys. So we go to the top five for this week. In number five, we have OpenSUSE with 10.19.
Yep, the net is trending down.
Yeah. Number four is Magia with 10.54.
Ditto.
Number three is Debian with 12.79.
Yep, same there, trending down.
And number two is Ubuntu with 12.95.
Trending down.
And in the number one spot is Mint with 35.82.
Yep, and that's trending down.
Down, yeah.
All trending down.
I
wonder what, that's kind of unusual.
Well, it's the last 7 weeks, or the last 7 days. And all those have had releases, or not all, most of them had a release over 7 days ago. So they peaked over a week ago, and then they're coming back down.
Yeah, makes sense.
Yeah.
Makes perfect sense, Tony.
All right.
Okay. So I guess.
What distro are you reviewing this week, Mary?
All right.
Mary's review.
Yeah, my review. My review this week is of a kind of a modest distro, that we just spoke about a little and, during the distro list. And, it is Linux Console. Now, what kind of attracted me to it, and first of all, the word console, and I thought, ooh, this is going to be some CLI stuff. There probably isn't even a window manager in there. Well, I was wrong. Oh. there is a window manager in there. And as soon as I get my document to open, we'll be wonderful. But anyway, here we go. Yeah. So, I want to share a little bit about the vitals of, Linux Console. The maintainer is Jan Le Doré, I believe his name is pronounced. I may be mispronouncing that. My apologies. The distro's latest birthday was June 9th, 2015. Now, it's not derived from anything, so excuse me. It's not Ubuntu-based or anything. It's just basically its own little distro. Yeah. And funny enough, there's another sister distro to this called Albatros OS.
Okay.
Yeah, so anyway, and it's based on the Linux 4.0.5 kernel, and the review desktop is LXDE. Now, there are several ways you can run Linux Console. You can run the Windows installer, because you can install this in Windows, and I tried that.
Oh, okay.
I should say I successfully tried it, because
it works.
It did, and I started doing it, I thought, no, this might not have been such a good idea. Perhaps I should have started a virtual Windows machine, but I did. It
does
worked.
It automatically set up a multi-boot?
What it does is that, as far as I could tell, it copied some files on. You select the drive. I talk about this a little bit, but I'll talk about it now and then skip over it later. But you select the drive, and because I have two drives in there, I've got a solid-state drive, and then I've got a traditional drive. I installed it to the traditional drive because the OS is on the other one. I don't want to mess that up too much. So, it downloads the files, and then it, creates some loop devices, I think, and the squash FS and that whole thing. So it just runs it right off there. It not only did that, but it also made a change to the, Windows bootloader.
Okay.
And it presents me with options, and it very nicely defaults to Windows because, again, that's my work machine.
Yeah.
But Linux Console is another option there. So I'm thinking, wow, this is I was kind of impressed with how it handled it. I mean, it did it very smoothly. And then I thought, well, when it's time to remove Linux Console, I'm going to have to figure out how to get that off there. I probably can run some kind of repair, Windows, you know, boot record repair or something.
I believe that's editable. There's a few tools you can edit that really simply.
Okay.
Because it's just a text file for Windows for the boot file.
Oh, is it?
So the boot.ini file has everything in there.
Oh, I'll check that out. Okay, excellent.
And you can actually change the defaults. It's got like really simple command line switches in there to tell it which way to boot.
Okay. Excellent. Well, that's good. But anyway, so yeah, the first thing I did though, in addition to the Windows installer, you can also set it up to do a live USB or to burn an ISO. And then from the ISO, you've got two ways. You can just run it live, or you can also just install from the ISO.
Okay.
So there's really a lot of options with Linux Console. Linux Console, now from the live environment, which is where I spent a lot of my time, Linux Console boots to a grub menu offering with the following choices: live CD, the live USB, which then will proceed with an install once you've plugged in a USB drive, a fixed USB, which uses some scripts to fix a problem if you've got it with your live USB drive, And then it's another one's called Fix Me Mode, which will download and run a Fix Me script if there's something else wrong with the install. There's also a text mode, which I did not try. And at the bottom, a couple of other options, Rescue Boot and then other options. And I really didn't go down that rabbit hole. I thought I had enough to deal with. Now, interestingly enough, Linux Council is licensed under the GPL v3 license, not GPL v2. I simply walked through a language selection screen, and after which it booted to a very clean LXDE desktop. Now, I did check. It's running from the laptop that I used, my test laptop, which I got from you, Tony, remember?
Yeah.
It is running the i915 Intel graphics adapter or driver, and then wireless. I think the Broadcom module is in there, but I think I needed to install some stuff on my end, which I did not do. I just, I took the easy way and just plugged in the network,
wired.
Yep. And just went from there. So anyway, so if you're going to install this and you're running a Broadcom, you got a Broadcom chip, you have a little bit of work to do, but not too much.
Yeah.
Now the default, the browser's, Cupzilla. The Office suite is LibreOffice. However, it's an icon on a dashboard because when you open it up, you've got three little icons. You've got to open up this dashboard, and then what will happen is that it's downloaded and installed. So when you initially even when you install Linux Council, those particular products or programs are not available to you. You got to download them. So a note on that: the mail client is Thunderbird. Same thing there. You're gonna have to download and install it, and Matt would have a fit.
Right.
And the file manager is PCManFM. Let's see here. I just mentioned about the desktop is very clean. I mean, what I always like to see when I'm running live is that little install icon on the desktop, and I was not disappointed. It was there. Now, what's kind of interesting is there's another one. There's another icon there that will open up this dashboard suite of things. And by things, I'm talking about a number of games. There's also something called I don't know if you guys have heard of this. It's called Compre. It's an educational. You might be interested in, Tony, installing this for the kids, because this is an educational suite of really fun learning games and all sorts of things that that were geared toward kids, which I kind of looked at and thought, wow, Tony needs to know about this.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, it's something that might be useful. It was one of the more interesting programs that I saw on there, because the other ones were, let's see, there was, Minecraft, which now, and unfortunately I never got it to work, because I didn't have an account. So I decided I was going to set up an account. I tried to set up an account and it wouldn't set up my account. So I tried several times and it wouldn't work. So
Minecraft is how I familiarize my kids with Linux. Because I run it in Linux and they had to learn how to move the jar files around to load the mods and add some of the Java stuff. And,
really?
Yeah. I sat down and that's how they learned Linux.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah. But for some reason I couldn't get that one going, but I was able to download and install Skype and that worked just fine. I downloaded, and installed both. And actually I did that once I installed it, because in this live environment, I did try to test it in the live environment at work. It was kind of interesting though, is that the Chrome browser is downloaded as a dev package, and Mozilla, you go to Mozilla Foundation website and download that, which is not a dev package. So when you look at the menu, you'll see Chrome listed there, but Mozilla is not listed. And I was thinking that maybe that's due to the fact that it's a dev package and easier to integrate into the menu than the Mozilla browser.
Probably.
What are they using? The app still? Is it app built into the still? Or
app?
The app kit. What kind of package manager?
The package manager that they used, it was, let's see if I've got that on here. I do. There's a, I'm kind of jumping ahead here. Now the dashboard system is called Lutris, and it included something called OPKG-GUI, which goes to something called the DBAB package manager. Now the interface is very Spartan, showing major package categories, and it kind of reminded me of the GTK file manager. So they don't, you're not using apt-get. you're, okay. They've probably got it built into their script that they're using.
Got it. So they have like their own that they put on top of it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. But when, but I definitely was loading, downloading dev packages.
Yeah. We said dev packages, yeah. Well, app was in there.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So anyway, so I thought that was kind of interesting. Let's see here. Let's see. I have jumped all over the place on this, but anyway, but yeah, this basic tool, this, is called, DBAB. And according to, their website, it allows you to build a, as they termed it, a soft, smart, fast, and multilingual Linux distribution. That's how they said it. Overall, I found it to be serviceable. I think if you're going to have kids use it, there's some tools there for kids, some games. There are productivity tools, some basic ones. Certainly as using it as a full-fledged distro, it's not something I would use per se, but, I was impressed with that gCompress, and it also has TeamViewer. It has the ability for you to download and install TeamViewer. So I thought that was kind of interesting. I thought that was an interesting app to have, and what I perceived to be kind of a modest distro.
Yeah, I would assume any dev package then you'd be able to download and install.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I know TeamViewer has dev packages available.
Yeah, well, that OPKG GUI or whatever that is, you have to install that, and that's just the pretty face in front of the package system. So,
oh, okay.
So that gives you access to hundreds of different packages. Hmm. And I did install, I installed Frozen Bubble, just to see if I could get that to work or, to download. I opened it. The resolution was not quite what I was expecting. It was sort of a little rectangle and kind of, anchored in the upper right corner of the screen. So I don't know if there's some little tweaks that need to be done there, but
so it wouldn't stretch full screen.
No, I couldn't get it. I could not get it to scale full screen.
Wow.
So. Good. Yeah, so that was a little disappointing. I was hoping to see that work, but everything else that I installed from the dashboard appeared to be fine, with the exception of Minecraft, as I mentioned.
Did it have Tux Paint, though? That's important.
I think, I don't recall specifically, but I'm willing to bet money that it does, simply because in the categories in this package manager, it had lots of different things. And that's a relatively straightforward app, so I would think that it did. So yeah, so overall I found Linux Council to be, as I said, kind of it's serviceable. There's some glitches to it, the Minecraft one. By the way, too, another one, and I can understand why they did it, but I still think it's unsafe. You're running as root user.
Oh.
Yeah.
Now I think they probably did that so that you would bypass the password prompt. But I think people are so used to password prompts. In Windows environment, you get those little prompts about accessing privileged resources, or you get this, that, and the other thing. I don't see why people would not.
Is there a prompt at all for any type of install?
No,
it just goes.
You there is no prompt at all.
Oh, okay.
You can click it and it just starts downloading and installing, and it reaches out to the Linux Council website to download these. But yeah, you start off as root user, and that's how you are throughout the whole thing.
Sure.
And I saw that as a downside. So, as I said, it's serviceable. You just need to know that you're running as root, and you need to know that some of these things, may not work for you. Your mileage may vary, but that's Linux Council.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Thank you, Mary.
You're welcome.
It's time for the tech news of the week.
And we're going on to the news.
Yes, we are.
So there's, I don't know how, we usually start off with Matt, but Matt's not here. So.
Well, we could start with Tom. We could start with me. We could start with you.
Sure. Tom, do you have anything you want to start off with?
Or? Go ahead and start. I'm looking.
Oh, okay. I have one news item, and actually, Tony, this almost falls into the security thing.
All right.
And this is one that I came across. I think it actually came out a few days ago, but I came across it early this morning about 1 o'clock when I couldn't sleep from those fireworks. But it has to do with Windows 10, which it may or may not be coming out at the end of the month. Their new Wi-Fi system is new Wi-Fi Sense shares your Wi-Fi password with Facebook, Outlook, and Skype contacts.
What?
You have to opt in for it. But I think just the mere fact of having that available like that, I just think that is, yes. And this was from Extreme Tech, and there'll be a link to it.
Oh, I get it. I see how that can be used. So that you can, instead of having somebody type out the Wi-Fi password,
yes,
then you send it to the to their Facebook, and then they can say, put this in my, I don't. Mm-hmm. But still, if they're at your house and they're not on your Wi-Fi, then how are they going to get to Facebook to get to your Wi-Fi password?
Well, I guess if they have a 4G connection, you know, on their phone, but I don't know.
Yeah, but see, they want to get on, I guess.
Yeah, well, what they say here, this the feature is potentially controversial. It says when you turn this feature on, this feature of Wi-Fi on, or Wi-Fi Sense, and, it's, and they said that, they actually say here in the article, it's not clear whether it comes activated or not. It will request permission to connect to Outlook, Skype, and Facebook on your behalf. Other users on your friends list who also run Windows 10 will have their contact information shared with you as well, assuming they also enable the feature. So I guess both parties have to have it enabled and they have to be on that list. But I still think that having that information kind of floating out there, given, you know, the history,
right,
it just seems, you know, there may be a benefit. I just don't see it. So it really caught my eye, and I wanted to mention it.
Yeah, that doesn't sound very good to me. You know what they're also doing? They started this with Windows 8. It's in the Windows Live profiles, mm-hmm. and is that they're sharing the Wi-Fi passwords between devices.
Yeah.
So if you're connected on your phone, then you're connected on your laptop, and that's one thing that's.
Does that have to be a Windows phone?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
Windows phone. Windows.
Well, thank God I don't have that.
Logged in with your Windows Live, and because say somebody comes over with their phone. And you're like, well, it's safe enough for their phone to be on my internal network. So you give them the password. Well, and then a month later, they come by with their laptop. It automatically connects. And if their laptop has a virus, then all of a sudden your computers have a virus.
Yeah, they're trying to keep these profiles. It kind of reminds me of, you know, the roaming profile set up with the server side.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's going to be profiles held in Microsoft's cloud.
Yeah.
Which does worry me a little bit.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. And not only if it's hacked, then, I mean, but how many people want to get on your Wi-Fi? But it's more that their laptop has a virus. That's what I'd be worried about.
Yeah, well, maybe there are some internal changes in Windows 10 that would mitigate that or something. I don't know. But along those lines, there was something else I saw, too, and this is going to kind of turn into a second news item, although I don't have the link with me. Have you heard the change that Ubuntu is going to be making to their package manager?
No.
Snappy, have you heard of that?
Yes. I've heard the name, but I haven't seen what they're going to do about it.
Well, based on what I read is that it's going to kind of segregate things so that packages that you install they're going to be kind of in a different location on your hard drive. I mean, they're part of your system, of course, but it's basically to kind of keep things segregated. So some of your core stuff, it reminds me of a Windows program called Sandboxy. I don't know if you're familiar with that at all.
It segregates everything out, yeah.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of that. So they're going to be moving away from what they currently use. And
well, no, they're not actually moving away. They want to
use it. Oh, thanks for clarifying.
Yeah, now this was interesting because everyone was jumping on bandwagon that they're going too far, you know, with Ubuntu.
Mm-hmm.
One of the developers had gone on Reddit and did some Q&A. Mm-hmm. And says, we're going to keep apps, we're going to do this. Of course, this is one developer working there. So, but it sounds like they're going to keep apps.
Oh, okay.
Offer this as an option. And I believe it's all related to the phone systems because of the way they wanted to have things on the phone. So they wanted to go with the Snap because it's going to integrate into their vision, as I understood it from his Q&A.
Okay. Well, you definitely got a lot more information than I did. I just saw it when I was buzzing through looking
and
for stuff.
People are raging about it because, of course, you're taking away my app. You're breaking up. I'm moving to another district.
Yeah.
But overall, it didn't sound like they're really trying to do that because they're based on that. It's supposed to have some dependency, solve some dependency issues with Snappy. But I believe, if I understood right, a lot of it has to do with because of the phone development because they don't want you to have to. Oh, you want to install this package on the phone? Here's all the dependencies that are going to come with it. They wanted to be able to get one single thing to make the phone install easier, as I understood it from this interview.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, to be able to move from device to device and still have everything work the same and install the same.
That makes
sense.
Good.
Cool.
So those are my,
I had one thing that with a news article that, kind of goes along with the Windows stuff is, that Windows is dropping their patch Tuesday with Windows 10. They're, I don't know if you're not familiar with what Patch Tuesday is.
Oh, I am.
Every first Tuesday or is it the second Tuesday of the month, release all the patches for that's been building up over the month. And it's kind of nice for system administrators so they can review all the patches and then implement them.
Yeah.
But the downfall of that is if there's a security vulnerability that's released before Patch Tuesday, then all these Windows computers are vulnerable.
Yeah, they don't like doing out-of-cycle patches. And if you do some reading, I don't know how much you want to get into this, the Windows 10 patch system is very, very different, and they take away a lot of control from administrators. As a matter of fact, if you get the home version of Windows 10, you have no options on the updates. They load automatically.
Really? Oh,
I heard that. Yes, I heard that.
You have to get a Pro version, and then you can delay them, but you're only allowed to delay them up to 30 days. And if you have the Enterprise version, you'll be able to delay them by a couple months.
So, does that include optional, or does that include the required?
Microsoft's not answering all questions,
right?
As usual. They have an operating system that they're releasing in less than 30 days without all the details released to the public. But I thought that was interesting because there's no more versions after version 10. They're going to do a rolling release, essentially, copying off the Linux world.
Yeah.
But they're, you will, if you are X amount of days that you didn't do updates, you're not going to be the latest version of Windows and you're going to lose support. But that's why they're pushing it so all the home users, there's not an option. You just get the updates as they come. There's also word of a distributed model for this where if one of your computers on the network downloads all the updates, they'll share with the other ones. But I'm not clear on how that's going to work because that's not a live feature in the test model right now. But that was something they talked about, I think, at the Build conference.
Yeah.
Which kind of, actually, I don't think that would be a bad thing for Linux. You know, I've got several Linux boxes. If one downloads the updates, it just pushes, and you can say this is essential one. You can set that up in Debian, but it's not like a one-click option. You know, it's not,
right. Yeah, there's a lot of work to be able to set up your own mirroring server for dev packages. But I thought if your apt is running through HTTP, then your caching server will also do that. If you have a proxy server running.
You could do that as well.
Yeah.
But usually the packages are so big, they're larger than the files that will most of your proxy server, unless you modify a proxy server to say, hey, don't. Because most of the time, proxy is only going to keep a 1 or 2 meg file. You say, okay, keep these 25, 35, 75 meg kernel downloads here local so I can stream them.
Yeah.
And with everything going to HTTPS, that becomes not relevant either. But the more we go to SSL, because they can't cache the SSL stuff.
Right. Yeah. Cool.
I guess we talk LastPass real quick. I'm a LastPass user.
Oh, yeah.
They're a security breach. Now, LastPass, to me, model company for how they did this, they said, yes, we found suspicious activity on the network. And that was enough for them to let the public know that this happened. It does not mean there was some major thing stolen. They don't have evidence really of what was or if anything was taken. But as LastPass is a company, the reason I support them, they don't have 5 passwords. They have the encrypted blob. So even if they did take the encrypted blob, you still don't really have anything. A lot of people, and there was a couple articles, even that people at Ars Technica says, they're not even bothered changing their master password, even with the potential role it was taken. As long as you have a strong master password, you should be safe. I should say passphrase, nice long.
Like yeah.
About 19 characters with some special characters in there, so I'm not overly worried about it. And it becomes the habit of typing it, so it's not hard to
remember. Mine is the Gettysburg Address.
Yes.
With a 3 instead of an E.
Gettysburg Address with 100 hash iterations, and away you go.
Wow. Yeah.
I still recommend 2-factor for solve the problem.
That's... Well, we do that on the website, don't we?
Yeah, 2-factor.
It used to annoy me, but then I thought, you know, it really is a nice extra security layer.
Well, you're using Duo security as well, aren't you?
Yeah, security. I have 2-factor set up for that, and for SSHing into my servers, I have 2-factor set up.
Yeah, oh, that's nice. So it works. It works well.
So yeah, it's nice.
Thanks again.
You're welcome. I found another article that the Plex, if you have a Plex account, they're saying the Plex forums and what was the other, the forms and something else was hacked. And, but it doesn't specifically say your main Plex account.
It said they still need to change your password on your main Plex account.
Yeah.
It was compromised.
I went ahead and did it.
It would just be a safe, be a safe thing to do.
Yeah, exactly. So I'll have a link to that. What else? I had starred like 30 articles over the last couple of weeks, and now I'm glancing through.
And then
like, well,
along
that's
comes
not
baby.
So important.
Oh,
right.
Okay.
Yeah. And
yeah.
It was actually when we were sitting in the hospital. I'm like, I don't have much to do. So I'm scrolling through my news. I'm like, but I don't know. Docker Rivals joined together an open container effort.
Just don't drive.
Right. Open container.
Okay. There's bad joke.
How encryption keys can be stolen by your lunch. I think it's like if you have sticky fingers and people look at your keyboard. I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Look for the mayonnaise marks on the keys.
Yeah, it's possible to do the keystrokes. Yeah.
Well, that's funny.
So, yeah, I mean, things like this look like interesting articles, but then I think back on it, it's like, well, that's kind of, yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
You won't believe what this person can do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
keyboard.
Right.
Oh, but going back to the open container, I just want to mention one thing. I was reading this article and, they have these, up in Traverse City, I guess they have, and a few other places, they have these, booze trolleys. Where you can sit at a bar,
yes.
and this guy bicycles, and he's not drinking, but everybody else on it is drinking.
Yes,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, and so there's some question about the open container law,
yes.
But they're saying, well, the driver, you know, how these vehicles should be classified.
There's a an exception there because it's the same way the party buses and limos work.
Oh, there you go. Sure.
Yeah. I know there's an exception law. To that. So you can have that way. You can have a chauffeur and a party and a limousine and without. It's a loophole or whatever.
Yeah, right. The only thing is that the insurance company of one of these companies said that their premium was going to double because of the concern of drunken patrons falling out of their seat out of the street.
Yeah.
I mean, that's something to, you know, something to think about, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, but I wanted to mention that, the open container.
That's funny. All right.
Okay.
Well, what else do you have, Mary?
Well, I've got KDE Corner.
Hey.
Yeah, I do. Couple things, actually. Eric, I love the name of this thing. Eric 6.0.7 was released. Now, Eric, is a Python IDE, that has integrated project management capabilities, as well as an unlimited number of editors, integrated shell debugger interfaces. It's just integrated, I think, is probably the watchword. But anyway, they just had that release a few days ago. There'll be a link to that in the show notes. I'm going to actually download that and install it because with that little course I took and the other course I'm going to take, I hope to hone my Python skills so I can really do something.
All right.
Instead of pull data out of these files. And also KDE, they shipped KDE applications 15.4.3. I'll have a link to that in the show notes. So, those are their core apps and things,
cool.
As opposed to the Plasma desktop, which is something a little different.
Right.
So anyway, but yeah, those are the couple of KDE things that I had.
One more KDE thing. Kden Live is now officially part of the KDE package.
Oh yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, yes, they were mentioning that, this release included, I'm glad you mentioned that, Tom. This release included some updates for Kden Live.
Yes.
I love that editor.
I love it. I found some bugs in the new one. A couple of
really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Do a lot of
which version?
Because
I haven't used it in the last few months.
15.04.
Oh, okay.
That should be the latest release number on it.
Okay.
But no, there's a couple little bugs after it updated. I was excited. I'm like, oh, new version, and they have some enhancements in it. And I need to do some bug reporting. A couple of little snap cues, like when you put two videos and you drag them over each other, you should be able to click between them and it auto dissolves. Well, it does it, but it puts the dissolve too far every time. It goes past the video.
So oh, that's something that would be an easy fix.
Yeah, it's all really little minor things I noticed. And when I was doing some video where you take one person and have a smaller video window, sometimes it crashes when you lay text on top of that.
Okay.
Which is odd. You need to remove the text. It's fine. So one of the videos, mm-hmm. I just removed the text I was going to put there and integrated it as a graphic. It worked that way. So those little things I found, it was consistent with Google. So I got to make some documentation notes. But I'm excited. It's part of the package. It's being fully developed.
And yeah, it's great.
Things are going for them. So I do all my video editing on it. So.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, that's cool. I've used KDN Live one time, and I really like it. I want to get more into that.
It's probably the most thorough one. I've tried a lot of different ones, and it's truly from top to bottom very, very thorough. Mm-hmm. Green screen effects and everything worked just awesome on it.
We had transitions.
We did a fun. We were for April Fools. We did a virus removal paint video. So we took paint and we chroma keyed it. So as we paint, the laptop disappears as we're just rolling paint over it.
Oh my God, that's funny.
Yeah, and it's easy to create that type of effect. Sure. It's truly. It was, I don't think, like 10 minutes to edit that video. I was like, that's neat. I'm like, it's just like 10 minutes of editing. Keep mm-hmm. live. It's, you hit a chroma key, you select the color, you choose it, boom, it's just done.
Nice. That's cool.
Beautiful.
All right.
Huh. All right.
You know, one article I missed when we were talking is the leap second thing.
Mm-hmm.
So this one article from PC World says that there was a hiccup overnight. So it's from the 30th to the 1st. And they are blaming it on the BGP updates. And so BGP is the Border Gateway Protocol for routing. And that's what the internet runs on.
Okay.
The routing protocols the internet runs on. And that's one thing that with the CCNA that I studied, we didn't get into BGP.
Mm-hmm.
But with most routing protocols, their updates are sent every few, like every 30 seconds or whatever the timing is.
Mm-hmm.
But either when something changes or on a specific timing. And it's by like 15 or 30 seconds mm-hmm. or something. So because of this, second blip, then there's a lot of the updates went. So it went from the average was going under, 100,000, which it had spiked up to 800,000 for a few seconds.
Wow.
Yeah. Anyway, so if you had noticed your internet was running slow, during leap second, then that's probably why.
I think this one went smoother than the one in 2012, because I think LinkedIn went off for a little while, the website. And I think Reddit was affected. This was back in 2012, I think.
Yeah.
Reddit.com, they were affected. There's several sites that had issues. But it sounds to me like, I don't know if we talked about this. I talked about it with somebody, or I heard somebody talking about it, where what Google did is they kind of took that leap second and just sliced it down to these very incremental. So it did not have the impact. And I think maybe other companies, well, hopefully they maybe followed suit.
All right.
You didn't mention, I'm surprised you didn't have it in your news, so I'll bring it up. Do you see the Aaron blog post? They are out of IPv4. It's finally
really?
Happened.
Now that you mentioned, I remember seeing that, and then I was in the midst of something else and forgot about it.
I have the perfect song for it. Have you not heard the song about the end of the internet?
No. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we'll play that one for you. That's cool. We'll
play one in there. But yeah, it's a post on their blog. They have requests in the pipe that they will not be able to fulfill. So they haven't denied these people yet, but they've got requests for blocks that are not going to be able.
Well, some companies have huge blocks from years ago that they may not have even used that
Wayne
they should
State
give.
Wayne has a couple class Bs that they actually have, they don't even private route their Wi-Fi. They've got so many public IP addresses. Even their distributed Wi-Fi network is on there. My friends at Wayne State were telling me, I'm like,
wow,
give them up. You're going to have to do a justification form. They're going to come for your IP addresses.
Yeah.
They're coming for your IP addresses. Yeah.
This creates an interesting BGP problem because normally, with BGP, you're going to have large blocks routed to Germany, large blocks routed to the U.S. Well, now there's all these brokerages that are taking and dividing up very small pieces of it, and they're taking a block and sending it to one country, another block to another country. Well, BGP normally would just send an entire block there, an entire class there. Mm-hmm. Now they actually have to subdivide it, so I'm wondering if this is going to cause any slowdowns in the BGP, because it's going to have... Because BGP works off solid routing tables, they're going to get very, very complicated as these brokerages start selling off small little bits.
Yeah, sure. You know, it's interesting you say that. I was listening to a podcast this week. It was a new one I was just listening to. It's called Packet Pushers. It's all about networking stuff. And they were saying the exact same thing. It's going to start causing a lot of headaches, and these routing tables are going to expand exponentially, because all of a sudden, you know, it used to be one entry to say, you know, go to Germany. And yeah. Now it's going to say, well, you go to Germany, but then if you have this section, go over here. If you have this section, go over here. So all of a sudden, what, you know, used to be 10,000 addresses go to one place is now is going to be split up to, you know, 500 different lines yeah. instead of one line.
Well, and the question is, because the BGP systems, how many of those are going to be replaced because they just don't have the capacity to handle that type of routing table?
Right.
You know, used to just a class A went to Japan. You know, you just, that section. Now it's like, well, almost all of that, of this section, like you said, it's going to go here. So is there enough room in these to store it?
Yeah, the backbone service providers are going to have to upgrade the routers just because people are selling off IPv4 and not moving to IPv6.
Right. And I don't see IPv6 coming anytime soon, so.
Right. Yeah, and I don't, you know, there's almost all homes now are, if you live in a metro area, all homes now are yes. are running dual stack. So yeah. it's not an issue, and you won't even notice whether you go into an IPv6 website or not. It's just the problem is if your home address, if you don't have an IPv4 also, then there's going to be addresses you won't be able to get to,
right.
And which is still... because of the primary internet.
And the phone networks are all IPv6.
Yeah.
They've been that way for a while because it solves the addressing problem mm-hmm. for them, and they have a stack in here that breaks it down to IPv4 because the applications are still required.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, that's...
It was
it's bound to happen.
Bound to happen. We've been waiting for this day for a long
time. Yes.
Everyone's been, you know, beating the fans into the world, APs. It's funny because it's been so long. It kind of, I think it went unnoticed because every time someone notices, no, this time it is real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Aaron posted it on their blog. It's not just someone ranting about it again.
Yeah.
We ran out of space, folks.
Yeah. You know, you always have to look for something at work to keep yourself relevant. Or, you know, you work for yourself, so you don't have to do that. But
well, I do.
well, yeah, you're right. And I'm thinking to myself that I should become the resident, like, IPv6 expert because every time I talk to the guys at work, they laugh at me about it. And there's going to be a day where there's an application that a user wants that's IPv only, or V6 only, and we don't have dual stack set up. So, you know, we won't be able to get to it.
And he gets a promotion.
That's right.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
Yeah, and it might be 4 or 5 years from now, but then I'll be the, you know.
I do keep up with it for the same reasons. I mean, the implementation could change. Mm-hmm. So we provide IT support for companies, so I have to constantly.
Oh, yeah.
That's why I'm always on here of all these news articles. That's part of my morning every morning is reading through a lot of news articles and just looking for different trends and things like that so we can stay on top of it for my mm-hmm. business. And you know, we got to make sure we're looking out for them. We keep up with security patches yep. and updates. We have a lot of clients we support. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's an IPv6 thing. I'm kind of waiting for it. I keep up with that. I've been reading up on it, but there's a lot of differences in there. Did they cover it a lot in your boot camp class? Or?
Just enough to add addresses to the routers and switches and explained a few things. But as for like the PC side, there's one line you add in for auto IP configuration, which is similar to DHCP, that's all the Cisco stuff talked about. So it passes on the IP addresses and stuff, but it doesn't deal with there's no DHCP server in Cisco equipment. And from what I heard in the past is you can use a DHCP server with it to be able to pass other info other than just the gateway and the DNS server.
It's supported in pfSense as well. Their whole IPv6 being FreeBSD, the stack is all in there, and they don't cut any of it out, which is nice. So you can it'll route both, and by default it's actually turned on, so they're by default ready. But
yeah.
It comes down to the rest of the world.
Well, you know, yeah, and that's the reason I went to pfSense here is because I wanted to run IPv6 in my internal network. And the problem I had is it's turned on, but it doesn't explain to how to get it running. So you have to know your address range and stuff that your home is getting, and that's where when I tried doing it before, I was screwing things up and
There's some nuances to it. Like I tested it briefly, but not gotten deep into it. But I'm keeping up with it because eventually it's gonna happen, and it may happen quick.
All right, cool. So Mary.
So Tony.
Do you have a convention scene for us this week?
You know, I do. And, it's kind of funny because the very last, entry on there, for some reason, I think it's because it's at the end of the month. I didn't have dates for it, but I'm going to go ahead and multitask here. I do have a Linux convention scene.
That's the other
one. Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, I like that. HUY.ASM.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. I'll bring that up, for September. All right. So what we have is July 8th through the 10th, and actually we're coming up on that this coming week. At the Hyatt Regency out in Santa Clara, California, we've got the 2015 USENIX Annual Technical Conference. Now, this brings together leading systems researchers for cutting-edge systems research and unlimited opportunities to gain insight into all manner of things. Technical, open source, et cetera. Now, there are a couple of sessions there that kind of caught my eye. One of them is full system Linux containers with bare metal speed and selling stuff that's free, the commercial side of open source software. So those are a couple of sessions that are at that one. And again, that's July 8th through the 10th. July 20th through the 24th at the Oregon Convention Center out there in Portland, Oregon, we've got OSCON. Again, that's July 20th through the 24th. That's where all of pieces come together. Developers, innovators, business people, investors. I think that's sponsored by O'Reilly, as I recall.
All right.
So that's, so that's an excellent convention. The next one I have it's called AnDevCon. What do you think that's for? AnDevCon.
Development?
I don't know.
Android. There you go.
There you go.
And this is the Android Developers Conference. This is July 29th through 31st, 2015 at the Sheraton Boston out in Boston, Massachusetts. Obviously Android is based on Linux. So, they said here, learn what all the 2015 Google I/O announcements mean for you. So that's what they've got. And then the last one I've got is, it's called FISL 16 in 2015. And that is the, Porto Alegre, Brazil. Or actually it's the International Forum for Free Software in Porto Alegre, Brazil. And that is, let me just see here. I've got it, here. And that is actually the 8th through the 11th of July. That's a little out of order. That should have been a little bit sooner, but anyway. And again, that's in Brazil. Some of the notable people that will be attending that conference, John Mad Dog Hall will be there. Leonard Pottering, known and loved by all, will be there. I call him Mr. System D. So this, with each passing year, this particular conference has established itself as a place for discussion, and exposure of what is newest in open technologies. So again, that's down in, Porto Alegre, Brazil. It's actually in the southeast corner of the country, so not too far from. So then I thought, wow, I'm gonna go to Google Maps Street View, and I dragged the cursor there. It looks like a nice little city, not too far off the ocean.
All right.
So that's the July 2015 Linux and Open Source Software Convention scene.
Very cool.
There's nothing for BSD. I looked.
Thank you, Mary.
You're welcome.
I think we're going to go on to listener feedback.
Yeah.
Unless, Tom, you had anything else you wanted to add in? Well, we're
Nothing at the moment. So I'm ready for listener feedback.
All right. I don't think we had much.
Well, it's because we're off for a few weeks there.
Yeah. I'm trying to go back.
Well, can I give a little comment? I didn't realize this, Venezuela. Which mm-hmm. they have some anti-American sentiment. Mm-hmm. But because of that, the government has their own Linux distribution that they use.
I've seen it. I don't remember the name of it. You're right.
It's a Spanish.
Yes.
It's like Camellia or something.
Yes.
But they use it in the government and the schools. And it's kind of a question. A couple of countries have adopted this. They don't like the fact with all the NSA spying that's pushing it. It's good for the Linux world because they go, what did Microsoft invent? Mm-hmm. Why should our government be using something that's tied directly to the U.S. government? Mm-hmm. And if it's open source, we can look at the source code. Mm-hmm. For open source. So their hearts are right place on this and using open source in the government. And I've always liked that it would be a cool concept if our government used more open source, and then as the tax dollars develop the applications the government used, then it releases the source code back to the public and the apps back to the public so we mm-hmm. can use them. I've always thought that would be a kind of a cool model.
Yeah. As opposed to
giving money to Microsoft.
I agree.
So, yeah.
Because you know they don't spend it well.
Steve Ballmer's boat's big enough.
Oh my God! Yeah, did he ever buy? He wasn't good. He was going to buy a basketball team, I think. Did he ever buy that team?
I'm not sure.
The LA Kings, I think. I can't. I remember the discussion. I don't recall it yet, but anyway, maybe somebody who's listening will know.
Yeah,
I suppose I could Google it, but.
Yeah, I wonder what he's doing now that he's not at Microsoft.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, he was from Farmington Hills, right?
Yes.
I was shocked to learn that.
Wow.
I've not set foot in that town since I found out. No, just kidding.
A weird piece of trivia about him I learned too is he's really good at remembering people, you know, the mm-hmm. typical salesperson, but he also remembers what you wore, and especially your shoes. He'll, if he met you 2 years ago, remember what shoes you're wearing.
Really?
That's crazy.
He was interviewed by, I think it was one of the people from the Twit Network, Jane Franny, one of the mm-hmm. Microsoft writers.
Yeah.
And it was funny because he commented that, and when she's talking to him, she goes, "How do you remember what shoes I was wearing?" I don't remember what shoes I was wearing. But apparently, it's something he does.
Wow. Wow.
Some little weird
that
trivia.
That is. Wow.
But he is a Michigan local. Mm-hmm. You know, he's definitely a rah-rah, get him excited kind of guy. You know.
I remember that. Developers.
So.
Oh, crazy. All right.
All right.
Tony, sorry about that side trip back to you.
It's all right. We had, I think we only had one email for feedback, and it was that Julian emailed about Matt's addiction to coffee. He was talking about his French press.
Oh, yeah.
And Julian suggests to move over to tea instead.
I agree.
You still get some of the caffeine, but it's not not as much.
Down a little, yeah.
Yep.
I've had to cut my coffee intake because I was addicted to it for a little while, so I had to slow it down. So now I try to do one cup. I'm particularly tired after last night's festivities at my house, I decided to have another one.
Yeah.
All right. And I think that was it.
All right. Well, that's quick. Quick and short and sweet.
All right. So we have our song for the day or for the show.
Mm-hmm.
And, here we go.
Featured music of the week.
Music. I keep on forgetting about our sound bites. Sorry, guys. Anyway, so it's called The Day the Routers Died.
Yep.
And I'm going to play the whole thing here. And
the lyrics are so clever.
Yeah, it's pretty good. But you comment that this is from Australia or something.
Yes.
And so they call it routers instead of routers.
Yes.
Or something.
The routers? In Australia, they say router, not router.
Yeah,
Roto-Rooter.
I think they're incorrect, but you know,
yeah,
we went our separate ways. That's we sell radio.
That's right. That's right.
Right. So here we go.
Long, long time ago, I can still remember when my laptop could connect elsewhere. And I'll tell you all, there was a day the network card I threw away had a purpose, and it worked for you and me. But 18 years completely wasted, with each address we've aggregated, the tables overflowing, the traffic just stopped flowing, and now we're bearing all the scars, and all my trace routes showing stars. The packets would travel faster in cars the day the routers died. So bye-bye, folks at Ride 55. Be persuaded to upgrade it or your network will die. IPv6 makes me let out a sigh, but I suppose we better give it a try. Suppose we better give it a try. But did you write an RFC that dictated how it all should be? Did we listen like we should that day? Now now you back at Pride 54, where we'd heard the same things months before, and the people knew they had to change their ways. And we knew that all the ISPs could be future-proof for centuries, but that was then, not now. Spent too much time playing WoW. Oh, there was a time we sat on IRC, making jokes on how this day would be. Now there's no more use for TCP. The day the Rogers died, so we're singing bye-bye, folks, we're Pride 55. Be persuaded to upgrade it or your network will die. IPv6 just makes me let out a sigh, but I suppose we better give it a try. Suppose we better give it a try. I remember those old days I mourned, sitting in my room downloading porn. Yeah, that's how it used to be. When the packets flowed from A to B via routers that could talk IP, that was data could be exchanged between you and me. Oh, but I could see you all ignore the fact we'd fill up IPv4, but we all lost the nerve, and we got what we deserve. And while we threw our network kit away, I wish we'd heard the things they say. But all our lives in disarray, the day the Rogers died, we were singing bye-bye, folks, we're about 55. Being persuaded to upgrade it, all your network will die. IPv6 just makes me let out a sigh, but I suppose you better give it a try. I suppose you better give it a try. Saw a man with whom I used to peer, asked him to rescue my career. He just sighed and turned away. I went down to the net cafe that I used to visit every day, but the man there said I might as well just leave. Now we have all lost our purpose. My Cisco share's completely worthless. No future meetings for me at the Hotel Krasnopolsky. And the man that make us push and push, like Jeff Houston and Randy Bush, should have listened to what they told us the day the Rogers died. We're singing bye-bye, folks, at Ride 55. Be persuaded to upgrade it or your network will die. IPv6 just makes me let out a sigh, but I suppose we better give it a try.
So I thought that was a pretty ingenious lyrics. I think it was recorded at a conference called RIPE or something like that.
Yeah, RIPE conference. I think that was, if I'm not mistaken, the video was 2007.
Really?
Once again, talking about 8 years ago, we're going to run out of IPv4.
Yeah.
That's why when it finally
Is that
happens.
On YouTube?
Yeah, it's on YouTube. There's a link on my Google Plus page.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where I brought it up, but then now I did just find it on YouTube, so I'll link to it. I'll have it in the show notes.
Yeah, the this is your show title, The Day the Rogers Died.
Yeah.
The Rogers are dead. The Rogers are dead.
The Rogers died. Yeah, the day the Rogers died. All right.
Okay.
So we've come to the end of the show. I forgot what I'm supposed to say right now.
You've been listening.
Yeah. You've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This was episode 154.
The happy 5th of July?
Yeah.
What did we say? Yeah, that's right. Happy 5th of July. Or the Rogers die.
Right.
The Rogers die.
Yeah.
This is Tony Bemis.
Mary Tomich.
And Tom Lawrence.
And
that's right. Saying
that was always Matt's.
Saying have a good day and week.
Yeah.
See you next time.
See you next time.
All right.
The Sunday Morning Linux Review with Mary Tomich, Tony Bemis, and Matt Bender.
Bite my 8-bit metal ass. That's bite with a Y.
Hi, folks. This is Chatter. K. Wisher, Honky Magoo, 5150, and I have started a new podcast. Yeah, I know we should have gotten Brian Lunduke to do the voiceover, but he wanted a script, and none of us are any good at scripting language. Anyway, it's Linux Lugcast. We're at linuxlugcast.com, IRC channel, pound Linux Lugcast on Freenode. We record on the first and third Fridays of the month, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 0200 UTC. We talk about things we've tried, things we got to work, things we failed to get working, things we built, and things we broke. Email us at feedback@linuxlugcast.com, and if we don't know the answer, we'll just tell you to install Arch. That's a joke, son. So join us as we stifle the outcry of voices everywhere for another Linux podcast.
Linux Luddites is a show where we try out all the latest free and open source software and then decide we like the old stuff better.
More than just news and releases, we check out a wide range of Linux distros, cover your feedback, talk about obscure command line programs, discuss burning issues over a pint, and much, much more. So join me, Paddy,
and me, Joe, every 2 weeks for news, reviews, comment, and generally being grumpy at linuxluddites.com.
Linux Luddites, because not all change is progress.
The Linux Link Tech Show, live every Wednesday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Tune in to the world's longest-running Linux podcast. On the web, www.tllts.org. By email, techshow@thelinuxlink.net. IRC channel, thelinuxlink.net. Port 6667/techshow. And Flying Rich is so hot.